listen to the Tommy Schnurmecker Show live weekdays 9 to noon on CJAD 800 and CJAD.com.
More attention, another standoff in Ukraine, all while President Putin claiming to have pulled back his troops from the border. Still no sign of that, and 40 to 50,000 of them remaining in a threatening position. Meanwhile, the pro-Russian separatists planning to go ahead with their referendum this Sunday, even though Putin has appealed to them to postpone it. And if a civil war is not already underway, it seems inevitable. We know that listeners count on us to keep them informed. So we're going to check in now with a top consultant on international affairs. Robert Cutler joins me now. Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Robert, could you explain to us why Vladimir Putin wants the pro-Russian separatists to postpone Sunday's referendum?
Well, it's more the case that he says he wants them to postpone it. One of the characteristics of the present situation is a 21st century form of psychological warfare where the Russian side misleads and says things that they change their mind the next week and people are still trying to figure out what they said last week. So I believe that he is very well informed, and his circle and his advisors are very well informed. They undoubtedly knew or had a very good inkling that this referendum was going, these referendums were going to go ahead anyway. And just in order to appear more conciliatory, more reasonable, with the emphasis on the word to appear, he made this statement in the same way that he made the statement a few days ago that he was going to pull his troops back from the border, whereas the head of NATO has said several times since then that their intelligence shows that no troops, in fact, have moved back.
This is an old Russian tradition, saying or from the days of the Soviet Union, you say whatever you want to say, whether it's true or not, is neither here nor there. But this is the question I want to ask you. Is he succeeding in outsmarting the West?
Yes, he actually is, because he never entered the 21st century world where people thought that force no longer mattered. One of the most vocal and articulate denunciations of his moves in Ukraine was made by the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, who in a previous career was an academic who believed and wrote and talked about how force is no longer the prime currency in international affairs. And she's been, not only her, she's been very concerned that Putin has actually proved her wrong by facts.
Right. Now, what do you think will be the likely outcome of this weekend's vote?
Oh, yes. Well, the referendums in the two provinces in eastern Ukraine, we know what the answers were in Crimea. And one of the things that Putin is trying to do, of course, between now and the 25th of this month, when there are national elections in Ukraine, is to render the country ungovernable in order to make those results of those elections illegitimate. Well, imagine that you have something like a low-level civil war going on in these two provinces. Can we really believe that anyone can carry on a referendum there if Kiev cannot?
Now, will he succeed in making the entire country ungovernable?
Not the entire country, because there's a center in the West that are not yet terribly afflicted by the low-level civil war going on the ground. But the country, as the state, you have to be a state, you know, you have to claim and you have to assert and you have to make credible the fact that you have, in the traditional phrase, monopoly over the means of physical coercion over a contiguous territory. He's just making sure that in these increasingly broad parts, swaths of eastern and southern Ukraine, that such a claim by Kiev does not look reasonable. And in fact, the Kiev government has admitted just, you know, last week, the week before, it's easy to any observer to see that when you have armed militias running around and you have to use your own tanks to take back municipal buildings that have been captured by rebels, then clearly you don't have control of the territory.
What outcome is Putin looking for?
Oh, that's a great one. You see, there's always a maximum plan and a minimum plan. Right now, he's looking to make the country ungovernable. His advisors have been, if you go back 20 years and read what they've been writing, he's actually just executing a plan that's been advocated by certain Russian intellectuals over the time, which does not exclude the eventual annexation of large amounts of territory in the east and the south, of which Crimea is probably just the first bite.
Does Putin have his eyes on any other countries?
It can't be excluded. I know that the head of the presidential administration in Kazakhstan is terribly concerned because there are a lot of ethnic Russians who have settled northern Kazakhstan in Central Asia in three large waves over the last three centuries. And when Putin talks about federalization of Ukraine, Kazakhstan knows that they are very, very vulnerable to this idea of federalization, too. You know, federalization just means giving the provinces more power, and if you give them more power, well, then, you know, they're already grabbing their own referendums, you know.
Is Putin concerned about Western sanctions?
It seems not. He actually, about a year to a year and a half ago, he started telling his friends and his advisors and his oligarchs, and also making public statements to this effect, that if they were smart, they would draw as much of their capital out of Western banks as they could. Part of that is nationalism, part of that is self-protection, but clearly the people or the oligarchs who followed his advice are a lot better off than they would have been otherwise.
How would you describe President Obama's role? How's he handling the situation?
Well, as far as that goes, no one takes him seriously. It all goes back to the red line in Syria, if you remember.
Right.
And that was kind of a turning point. That was kind of a turning point when he didn't follow through. The Secretary of State Kerry made this off-the-cuff remark in public about a settlement, and the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov picked up on that, and since then it's been all talk and no words. And you know, these people are in Moscow; they're professionals, and they make the Americans look like amateurs.
Now, this reputation of the U.S. being all talk and no words, what impact can this have in other areas besides Russia?
Well, it makes things in Europe, where there are NATO countries that used to be part of the old Soviet bloc, it makes them a bit nervous, which is one of the reasons that NATO, as an organization, asked six countries, including Canada, to send some military materiel and people there. You recall the six CF-18s that Harper sent over. That was not something he did just on his own. He did that because NATO asked him to do it, along with asking the U.S., the U.K., Poland, Portugal, and Germany were the other countries. And those are not going to Ukraine proper. Those are being based in places like Poland, which is actually probably the next front line. Because if NATO doesn't defend NATO territory, which includes Estonia and the Baltic countries, which are right on the western border of Ukraine, if NATO doesn't defend NATO territory, then it's a total joke.
Does Russia care what Canada says?
Probably. Russia doesn't care very much what anyone says these days. So the answer to that is no, but it doesn't make Canada special.
Okay. I see. What about the myth that Ukraine isn't a real country? Where did this get started and why?
Oh, well, that goes back a ways. Your listeners probably heard of the famine in Ukraine, that man-made famine that Stalin instituted in the 30s in order to try to destroy the backbone of its own culture and its own people. When you hear that in the media these days from some so-called experts, they really haven't learned anything in the last 20, 25 years, because it's true that you have the Western Ukraine, which is looks towards Europe, and you have the Eastern Ukraine that looks towards Russia, and they speak different. And a lot of them speak Russian more in the East. It doesn't mean they have Russian sympathies. But what has happened in the last 20, 25 years is that you've had a whole new generation. 25 years, it's literally a generation of people, young people who have grown up, who are interested in learning Ukrainian and English. And maybe Russian in third place, except in the East where they speak a lot. But even if you speak Russian in Ukraine, it doesn't mean that you want to join Russia. There are Ukrainian and American and European polling firms that know how to do public opinion polls, and these consistently and even to last week show that even in eastern Ukraine, 70% of the population does not want to join Russia.
Thank you. A pleasure talking to you. Robert Cutler, a top international affairs consultant on the latest developments there.
News Talk Radio, CJAD 800, CJAD.com.